Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint.
Whether you are a brand new runner or you already have a great mustache,
we're here to help you increase your running knowledge and present it at a practical level. This is The Running Public. When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings. So you're from the South. I just heard y'all. Where are you from?
Yes, I'm from Texas. So our days, you know, are usually triple digits now, and or close to it. It's like 98% humidity. In the mornings, we get like 72. But it's like 95% humidity, so it's warm.
Kirk, when Joyce and I first started working together, she wanted to do an ultra and a Hyrox within 6 weeks of each other.
Classic combo.
I think I told you about this.
Yeah.
But we got to a point. She said, "Hey, I couldn't get my Hyrox workout in today." I was like, "Oh boy, here it comes." She said, "The sleds were too hot to touch outside." Like, oh, that's a new one. I've never heard that before.
Now I'm better. I don't use that excuse anymore. I show up earlier. I get some towels. You know, I prepare.
That's a valid excuse, just not one I'd ever heard.
Yeah, no, it's good. You know, when we started working together, that was it was just fun to, you know, go do an ultra, and then it was, I think it was actually 3 weeks apart,
3 weeks.
and then go do the Hyrox, and I love the balance of ultras and Hyrox. They work good for me. Not very many people see the alignment, but I like it.
Didn't we have this discussion on here, Bracken? Like, I would rather pair a Hyrox with an ultra than a Hyrox with almost any other thing, because they're really both about durability. And if you're, even if the best of the best are racing for an hour in Hyrox, almost everybody else more, and that's an endurance event that requires durability. So I think they make sense, right? We had that conversation. I'm not delusional.
No, we said that on
a
Q&A, I think. We'd rather pair an ultra with a hybrid than like almost than like OCR in hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they
so I'm curious. Oh, go ahead, Joyce.
Oh, no, they work because, you know, you need the easy stuff. And running easy on concrete kind of bangs you up a little bit. And so running easy on trails, and in the South, it's cooler on the trails, have more friends on the trails. And so it just made sense to do all my easy work on the trails. And then, you know, the hard work, the stuff that really matters, the Hyrox, I do on the concrete, you know, out in the heat. And that's where it matters. And so I like, and then during certain seasons, you know, I'll go and do the ultras, and then other seasons I'll switch and go to Hyrox. So
we did an episode for people like you called "So You Want to Do It All."
Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
Yes.
I know a few like you. Bracken or Joyce, I'll let either of you take this. How did this conversation come to be? Why are we sitting here today?
Oh, I'm jumping in this one.
Okay, go ahead.
I told Kirk probably 6 weeks ago I wanted to have a conversation with you. And because it feels like you check a lot of boxes. I know you haven't been on a podcast before, and you feel like everyone on their first one, like, what are we even going to talk about? But from our perspective, you represent a vast majority of the people that are out there listening in one capacity or another. So I told them about you weeks ago, and then we had a spot open, and I just said, "Hey, you want to do this?" And you're like, "Yeah, I think I could." I said, "How about tomorrow?" And now we're here.
Yep. And I heard you doing the talk in front of all those people, and I said, "Sure, why not? You know, if you can do it, I can do it." And
I really
do agree. You know, there's a lot of age group women and men that, you know, we're not going to win it. We're not going to be elite. We're not going to get paid, but it's fun. And, you know, your kids look to see what you do, and it encourages them to give their best effort and, you know, just try it and have fun. And get some fitness, and then you can chase after kids, you know, later on down the road and be active. And that's, you know, all we want in life. Yeah.
So you're from Texas.
From Texas.
So you mentioned you have kids. So how old are you? Where exactly do you live? How many kids do you have?
Yeah. So I just turned 40, and I have a 13-year-old boy. He's in a rock band. And then I have an 11-year-old girl who does competitive twirl. She keeps me busy. 3 times a week, every week for 10 months out of the year, we're doing dance work. And then half the year is dance competitions out of town. So she gets to listen to you too while we drive, you know, to wherever. And I listen to y'all, and that's how that goes. So we're very busy. But I train almost every day.
Makes me, when I hear things like this, Bracken, yeah. I know I cuss once in a while. Not like the real bad words, like the ones that are just like sort of acceptable, but really I shouldn't be saying. And then I hear like you and your daughter driving in the car together, and that makes me feel really bad about my four-letter words that occasionally slip.
It's good. It's so good. So there's some shows like, you know, I can't listen to Hunter at all. like not even 2 minutes of his, but, I can listen to you guys. And I listen to the RMR and I listen to the, Race Brain, you know, and she just, it's part of the, compromise, you know, I can drive her to wherever, but I've got to be listening to, and getting some education along the way.
I just want to apologize to any and all kids out there, because I hear this more often than I ever thought I would, that every time you're in the car, driving wherever, mom or dad chooses the podcast. Mm-hmm. And that is just not what I would have wanted growing up, to listen to two guys talk about running.
Yeah. No, she enjoys it too. She's like, that's very interesting. Or, you know, y'all will say something and she's like, oh yeah, that's good. Like she can kind of relate, or, you know, she's got her competitions and they don't always go perfect. And she relates to some of what you guys talk about. So it's good.
Well, what's her lactate threshold?
Her what? No, she doesn't have one. So, but she does say she wants to get stronger. She's trying to carry a girl in one of her dances and she can't yet. But yeah, no, that's about it.
Well, she does have a lactate threshold. She just doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
She doesn't run yet.
Okay. Where in Texas are you specifically?
Yeah, so I'm in Houston, kind of like close to the Woodlands, and I run with a couple of groups around here. I'm part of a trail group and then a road group and a couple of gyms, and go everywhere to get it all done.
And how did you and Bracken get together? How did this happen? Why did you reach out to Bracken?
Yeah, so I had always, so I previously, before all this, I started running in 2017. So before all that, there was no fitness ever in my life. I wasn't allowed to sweat as a child. I wasn't allowed sports. And I could talk about that later. So then in 2017,
we're going to end up talking about it right now. I get the sense.
Okay.
That's a cliffhanger.
So 2017, I started running. Just, I wanted to get fit. And, so I, you know, typical mom stuff. I joined all the mom fitness groups and then quickly outlifted all of the moms in the group and then wanted something more and more. And so I started doing OCR, went to Killington, West Virginia, did OCR Worlds, had fun with that. And then there was High Rocks. So then I started doing High Rocks and, you know, wanted to do a little bit of everything, wanted to get better at High Rocks. But I had always wanted to redeem myself with the Ultra, Spartan Ultra. So I wanted to do a Spartan Ultra again. And I had a particular time I wanted to hit. And then I also wanted to do a High Rocks 3 weeks later. So typically, you know, two different races, But I was determined. I wanted to do them both. I knew I could. I knew I had the time, the effort, the discipline. And so I reached out to Bracken and he said he could help me. And that's kind of where it went. So.
Is that how you remember it, Bracken?
Yeah. Yeah. She's, I think we're glossing over a few details probably to keep her standing in her community. Yeah. But yeah, that's essentially it. There was a time that she believed she could hit in both and basically just said, is this realistic? Can I train for both? And my answer is what it generally is. Like, of course. My job is not to say, is an idea stupid? It's to say, if we're going to do something dumb, let's do it in the smartest way possible. Oh, yeah, I have no qualms or hesitations over that type of thing. And I'm sure I told you at the time, Joyce, that that's the type of plan that's way more fun to program.
Yeah.
Going after a 5K is great. Going after a marathon is great. But it's not rocket science. It's been proven over the course of 100 years how to train for these things. And there's very little deviation athlete to athlete. Train for an ultra, what were we targeting at the time? 8 hours?
Sub eight. I hit that.
So, yeah. So sub 8 hours there. And then trying to run closer to like 80 minutes in or 85 minutes in a Hyrox. Like that's fun. That's a lot of moving pieces. How are we going to fit that in? Those are the kind of things that get you out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we just got to work. You know, if somebody ever tells you you're just going to get injured or, you know, kind of laughs at whatever goal, you know, it's just not the right fit. And it's not a negative against them or me. It just wasn't a good fit. And to have Bracken just say, you know, let's go for it. Let's try it. Here's the training and let's get to work. And I forget what kind of week, how many weeks that was, but, you know, it was so much fun. You know, the Spartan Ultra, I had done it 3 years prior. And it was almost 11 hours, 10 hours and 30 minutes. And then to do it in 7 hours and 40 minutes, it was fun. It was good. And lots of people DNF'd because of the heat. And I loved the heat. So it was great. And then to do, I think I did 118 in High Rocks a few weeks later, which is a PR as well. So it was good.
That's not easy to pull off. I guess since you listened to us, we just had last week, I think, or the week before, athlete situation sort of episode. And I outlined one of my athletes who wanted to go from like ultra to ultra or recover in between big events. And if you were to come to me and say, well, I have an ultra and then I have a Hyrox, which is very high output 3 weeks later, it would be like, okay, how on earth do we get this woman to recover in between so she can go and use her fitness again? Let's take a peek behind the curtain here, Bracken and Joyce. Mm-hmm. I want to know what happened because I don't see Bracken's programming actually. In fact, only one time, Bracken, we had athletes working out together, so we had to share programming, but that was it. In fact, we come together on the running public training plans, but I don't know what his programming looks like for his one-on-one athletes, and he doesn't know what mine looks like really. So tell me what does one do in 3 weeks between an ultra and a Hyrox to PR both? What did that 3 weeks look like for you? I know people want to know.
Oh, I don't even remember. I mean, it was a year?
Bracken's pulling up your training plan. I can see it.
Got it right here.
Aren't you, Bracken?
I do know he said to follow
Let's see how good.
He said to follow it to a T.
Let's see how good Joyce's memory is.
I listened.
Very rarely do I tell someone, you must do this. Usually we can get ways around it. Recovery after a big event like that is one of the only times.
Yes. No. He told me just to recover, take it easy. I do run every day a mile. So I still kept up the running, but greatly reduced everything. It was almost a walk that first day.
She's a run streaker, Kirk. Yeah. And that was one of our first conversations is, do I have to stop this?
Yeah, no. And I appreciated when he said
how many days are you on?
So I wrote it down. 1,308.
What? And what was the reason, not to side rail us, but what was the reason for your last missed day?
Well, this is when I started it. So I had never started it.
She hasn't missed.
I haven't missed a day. Yeah.
You haven't missed. Oh my goodness. Talk about discipline.
Let me just start a running streak. Actually, it was to get everybody in my family, my kids and husband on board with, I have a goal and I need to spend at least 10 minutes on myself every day. And that's kind of how it started.
Hmm.
So
that's how you keep a streak going.
Yeah. Okay.
You just never break it.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
And now my daughter,
is that how it works?
Reminds me, you know, if I fly, she's like, don't forget your mile. You got to get your mile in. Or, you know, if I'm going here or there without her, she's like, don't forget to run. So it's good.
So we do.
It's pretty amazing, actually. I always wonder about run streakers, like you get the flu. Or like you actually get an injury or something, like the world crumbles on you one day because of everything working against you. Like, so if you get the flu or COVID, like you will drag your butt down the road for a mile. I want to know the details here.
Yes, I've actually had some family emergencies and I still am running in, you know, a hospital parking lot or, you know, a high school parking lot or wherever I'm getting my mile in. I think you have to give yourself grace with the time in the day. You know, I can't just say I only want to run in the morning or I only want to run at 10 a.m. There's 24 hours in a day and you have to find 10 minutes, you know, 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. You have to be okay with morning, afternoon, night, whatever it takes to get it done.
Yeah, Joyce is my reminder. She's my reminder that there's no such thing as too small of a workout window.
Yeah.
I've talked about it on here. I'm that person who's like, oh, I have a 60-minute workout and I only have 52 minutes. I'm skipping it. Like, that's not logical. And I know that, but it takes people like Joyce to like be that North Star, that reminder that all minutes are purposeful. They're all useful if you decide to use them.
Yeah. And like, you know, with my daughter's dance competitions, it's an all day event. It's out of city. And so I just bring my workout clothes on or I bring them, change in the car, run from my car around the parking lot. You know, I get a couple miles in and then change and go back into the dance thing. You know, you just got to get it done. However, it's not going to look perfect. It's probably the hottest part of the day, but you just get it done and it's no big deal. So,
we distracted you from your recovery 3 weeks between your events.
Oh, yes.
That was on me.
Okay.
So whether Bracken lays it out or you lay it out, I'm still very curious because this is a success story. You went and accomplished a big goal 3 weeks after accomplishing a big ultra goal. So, continue. I want to hear it.
So I feel like running was reduced maybe to 30% of typical. That's all I really remember.
I have it up here if you want me to go.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So we had a week where I didn't program a thing.
I want to know.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, I want to know the biggest thing for me is like, actually the whole thing is a big thing for me because I'm programming for people just like you right now, Joyce. That first week after, of course, I'm very curious about. And then I'm really curious what you do at the middle week, that middle week before, that week two. So anyways, continue.
So the first week was not programmed.
Okay. Yeah.
It was purely, you're going to keep your run streak alive because I can't stop you from doing that. And so it's whatever it takes to do that. Like all the mobility in the world, all the body care necessary, but the goal is only to hit the ground for 1 mile per day. Knowing that she'd spent all this time working, we could absorb it ended up being 8 days of nothing. Then from there, we went to doing 1 to 3 mile runs every other day. And that's kind of our standard range. Like on her recovery days, because she's going to run no matter what, it's a partial warm up plus one, but the range is up to whatever you feel like getting that day, but like one's her mandatory run. So every other day we did that, and then built up to the longest range we had was a 4 to 5 mile run. And then we alternated days. So, She had a workout where we did 5x1,000 meter run. This is starting in week two now. 5x500 meter row, 5x500 meter ski with progressing intensity. So the runs were easing into, the goal was to be running HYROX pace by the end of the runs. And then HYROX row by the end of the row, and then work hard on the ski. Her goal throughout this time was sharpen up her rowing and her wall balls, but rowing still uses quads enough that we wanted to be gentle on it. But then if there was energy left, you can crank on the ski at the end, which is opposite of how I would normally program HYROX. Ski stuff would happen first and the row would happen depleted, but she was already depleted. So we hit that workout twice and then we hit a progressive tempo run followed by sleds, and we hit a HYROX strong. So we need to crash course the stations, but we still don't want to be hitting the ground. So all 8 stations followed by no run in between to feel what are we missing, and then tried to cram skill work into the next week. We did 3x1,000, 1,000, 1,000. So 1,000 meter ski, 1,000 meter run, 1,000 meter row, and then 3 rounds of that, and then 50 wall balls. That was a week out. But in between, it was a lot of easy 1 to 3 mile runs and a lot of mobility work, and just prioritize enough of what she was going to feel, knowing that our plan the whole time was front load, front load, front load. All we had to do was remember how to do the pieces in between. We didn't want to have to build anything in between.
No. And I think the key was, you know, this whole time that I was training for the Spartan Ultra, I was still training for the HYROX. So it wasn't like there was 1 week or even a couple of days that I didn't touch something with HYROX. So, you know, do my rig outside and do pull-ups and everything for the Ultra, do my trail runs, but then still hit a sled or a row or, you know, touch a wall ball or something HYROX specific, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, every week. So that I was ready, because I'm not going to learn anything in 3 weeks in between. It was all just recovery and remembering the movements.
We did 3 quality days per week in this lead up. And Joyce, to answer your question, it was a 13-week build, then race week, and then 3-week transition. But we did 3 quality a week, and 2 of them were HYROX based combo workouts, where they were long workouts with at least 50% of it HYROX specific, either preceded by or followed by threshold engine work. So we were doing longer workouts, but half of it was impact. And then the Ultra got, we made sure that the HYROX work did target as much quad, glute, hip as possible. And then the Ultra duration work was all weekends.
And do you remember how you ended up feeling in that HYROX 3 weeks later? Like, did you show up and have a good day, so to speak? Or do you feel like you still had fatigue in your body when you had to push?
No, I didn't have, I didn't feel like I had any fatigue, honestly. 3 weeks was, you know, I was still probably a little tired, but I, you know, I felt good. I finished it strong and did what I needed to do.
And it was actually 4 weeks. We had 3 weeks of transition. Okay. So the race was the 4th week.
Okay, gotcha.
Which was important. That allowed us a full week off in a full race week.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it. That actually is very helpful, that extra week. I think the reason I asked, like, that 4 weeks is great. It's just long enough. I feel like with a big ultra, recovering is just my opinion. Be like, by the time your next race comes around, which 4 weeks later, you really don't even, you show up to the start line and be like, I don't even know like what my body's going to give me. Like, I hope it's there today. Like, you haven't really been able to confirm it in workouts before because you're holding back a bit. So like, you get to that race that's 3 or 4 weeks later and you're like, okay, if everything works, it's going to be there right when I need it. It's not like you're going to feel ready a week out or maybe even 5 days out. It's like you show up, you're like, oh my God, thank God it worked. Like, I'm here and available today. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's usually best case scenario.
And this was something, you know, not typical. Like, I wasn't going to throw this at Bracken every 6 months, like, you know, an ultra and then a HYROX. This was kind of like a once a year on a whim type thing, and not throw it at him all the time, the two two modalities. But we did something similar this year. I did Bandera 100K for the first time ever. And then I did High Rocks in March. And so I was still training for High Rocks while training for Bandera, which was good. That was fun.
So we've settled into a routine with Joyce where her quality work is High Rocks based with either before or after we hit our threshold work. And we just long run weekend. Like she responds, she's kind of a workhorse where she just will get two workouts done in a day if she needs to, or she'll go back to back on them. And that gives us, and she handles it well physically. So that gives us the flexibility to do that. But Joyce, do you remember the, we did two sims prior to the first one. We did a full High Rocks sim. Do you remember the other one?
It was the Ultra Sim, right?
We did a High Rocks Ultra Sim.
Yes. That was terrible. Ooh. I forget how long it was, but
20 miles.
Okay, 20 miles with High Rocks work, right?
Yeah. So, yes. Kirk, we decided to test. If we got through this, she was ready to pull both off. So we did a full High Rocks 5-mile run.
Yeah.
Full High Rocks run until you hit 20 miles.
I love that.
It was essentially High Rocks 5 miles, High Rocks 5 and change.
And doing workouts like that gives you just confidence that, you know, when the race comes, the race will be easier than what you did in training. Doing workouts like that just helps get you prepared, especially in your mindset.
Instead of one big long hill workout or long run, that was the 5 weeks out big one. And again,
that reminds me.
She handled it.
Oof.
Yeah, I forget what the weather was, but it was not cool. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, Bracken likes, and I prescribe pretty big workouts as such. I've never prescribed that one, but back when I first hired Bracken, because that's how Bracken and I met, because you're my coach for, I don't know, 6 months maybe or something in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I had 3 hours of KDE, I recall, on the ski hill. That was my last big one before Spartan Worlds, and I covered 20 point something miles with carries and freaking tire drags. And I remember being like, exactly. It's like, if I can do this for 3 hours and I survived, I can go handle running up a mountain for the same amount or less time. So those are very, as long as they go well. In fact, I have two athletes who, speaking of your situation, Ultra World Championships out in Morzine, Spartan World Championships. And then they plan to turn around and do the DECA 24-hour World Championships weeks later.
Okay.
Talk about puppeteering. Would something like that be up your alley?
Not the 24-hour. 24 hours is kind of, I've never gone that far. So I don't know about it back to that. But maybe something close.
So I want to direct us now a little bit more back in time, so to speak. Okay. So you said you're 40 now. You started running in 2017, did you say?
Yes.
So you started running, what is that? What the mathing there says you were like 33 when you started working out at all. Is that correct? Like purposefully?
Yes. Of any.
Okay. So what the heck did you have going on before that? What? So what was going on from 33 to zero? Years.
So I have a kidney disorder. It's called Gittleman's. It's very rare, but my body doesn't hold potassium or sodium. So, and I was undiagnosed in my youth. So I wasn't allowed to sweat as a child. So no sports whatsoever. I finally got diagnosed when I was 13. And I take medication now, every day, 4 times a day. But I just grew up with a mindset that sports weren't for me and I was never going to run and work out. That just wasn't for me. And then I went to college and got married and had kids. And then I had time to think and I was like, you know, that'd be kind of cool to work out with some moms. And that's kind of how it started.
Bracken gave me a little idea that you had this going on. So I wanted to make sure we talked about it because it's very intriguing. So you, as a kid, like how would symptoms present? Like, how did you know you couldn't sweat or work out? And you live in Texas, like you should have lived up here by us. That would have been helpful with that limiter. So fill me in. What was that like? Okay. Like, how'd that present?
Sure. So when I was five, it started when I was five, I would just fall over and have like muscle spasms. And then, you know, nobody would know what was wrong with me. I would go to the doctors. The doctors couldn't figure it out. And then that just sort of happened. About every couple of months, I would fall over and have a muscle spasm, go to the hospital. Doctors wouldn't know. When I was 13, I had a really bad one. And so they did. I went to a big hospital, nearly died. And then that's when they diagnosed me. But still, the medicine that they were giving me wasn't enough to do regular activities. So I was super skinny, super malnourished looking. And it didn't take until my 30s to really get enough medicine to survive and to get into fitness and stuff. So I take 20,000 milligrams of potassium a day just to live, just to survive. And if I miss a dose...
I was just wondering what the daily recommended amount of potassium is. I'm going to look it up if you don't know off the top of your head.
Yes, I don't know. But yes, it's 20,000 milligrams. I don't think you even know, Bracken.
Research here.
I thought it was 2,000. It was 1,200, 2,000, somewhere in that range. Thought we looked it up early on. Okay.
So, yeah, it says adult women 19 and over about 2,600 milligrams.
Oh, that's low.
A day. So you said you're at 20,000
every day.
Like, so you're at 8+ times.
Yeah.
So, well, this, I don't know. It really bodily chemistry very much intrigues me. Do you know more how that works in the system? Like, your body doesn't absorb it. The kidneys can't process. How does it work?
Yeah. So it all flushes out of my system. Nothing is held. So it's constantly
just potassium.
Sodium too. So, you know, sweat, sodium.
Oh, gosh. I don't
keep any sodium as well. And magnesium's another one I don't keep.
So do you take all the electrolytes that matter for bodily function and performance? Yeah. Oh my goodness. So do you take sodium as well, or like what you would call anti-water pills, which means it would help you retain water? Anything like that?
No, it's really just taking potassium. And a high enough quantity keeps everything leveled out.
But we ran into this with Hyrox.
Yeah, but I take medication while I race. I have to, because I've had seizures before after races. So the adrenaline will get me through a race, but then it's after the race, you know. So I always take medicine every 45 minutes is kind of like my typical when I race.
These are like horse pills.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're big. I've showed Bracken before. So yeah. And then humidity does make it worse for sure.
Hmm. So again, Texas.
Well, I just
yeah.
Yeah. I just picture you as a kid. So like, it's very important to, I don't know, like we make social bonds through movement and we feel inclusive through movement or organizations or things like that. Like, I just have to imagine, in quotes, like standing on the sidelines as like the strange girl with the condition.
It couldn't have been
easy, right?
I literally would just fall over. And then the strange part was I would get over it. And then nobody could figure out why, what happened. They were so confused and I didn't really talk about it. I was embarrassed. You know, it's very dramatic looking, and anybody who ever saw it just was like traumatized. But the more I run and the more I'm in fitness, the less seizures and spasms I have. So it's a disease I will always have. There's not enough people that have it to find a cure. So it's just, you just take medicine for the rest of your life is kind of how it is. So,
well, I guess it's a good thing your medicine is a natural supplement. Oh my goodness. They do.
Yes. But, you know, they've never had a seizure, a muscle spasm, because we just stay on top of it. So. But yeah, it's interesting. It's
better than having to take...
like injections.
Oh, go ahead. We have a little delay, so we're getting...
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, we're getting... Oh, talking over each other. No, go ahead.
So it's, the hardest part is that it's an invisible disease. So like looking at me, you can't tell. And when I race, you know, I look healthy. And then you see me, you know, popping my pills and you're very confused and it's not like I'm missing a limb, you know, that would be obvious, but with this, it's all internal. So it's kind of hard for people to understand, but yeah, that's about it.
That's about it. Something you have to think about nonstop all day, every day and be on top of, right?
Yes.
So then talk to me about, I would be so incredibly nervous if I were you to start working out, if I'm being honest, given you don't know how your body's going to react, whether you got the levels to where they should or not. Like walk us through that.
Sure. So I didn't really tell anybody about it when I worked out. So, you know, I would join these groups and did not bring it up. For months and even probably years, I didn't bring it up. I just had my pills. So in case anything happened, you know, I'd take my pills and I'd be fine. I know how to self-medicate through it. But yeah, I was nervous and just took it really slow. You know, I gradually did it, going to mom groups. Moms are always safe, you know, and just gradually worked up to where I had more confidence and then finally raced. And I think that's why I'm just happy and excited. And, you know, I love training and, you know, it could be 30 degrees outside or 100 and I'm still just happy that I get to do it. And, you know, my body's cooperating and letting me do it.
So we have people come to us that find running late in life, but I don't think either of us have ever had such an extreme example presented to us of someone who had, people be like, oh, I was never an athlete, but they did something, right? Oh, I played soccer growing up, but I wasn't an athlete. I have never once in my life met someone who is so severely not an athlete before picking up sport and then becoming legitimately good at it.
Yeah. I mean, and when I started, I was slow. I was so slow and I didn't understand racing or timing chips. You know, it was a bib. Everything was like new. I was like, you have to wear this around your ankle and, you know, and you have to wear, you know, the headband. It was all, everything was new, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So what was the progression to fitness like then?
Yeah.
Zero to hero, we'll call it. Like, I would imagine very humbling. Like, it's tough for people to stick to things because you probably, I mean, as romantic as we want to make this sound,
yeah,
like increasing training load when you have never done that amount can be tough, right? Like, what things did you learn along the way at first? Because you're relearning your body, right? Is what I'm understanding, and its capabilities. You thought it was capable of, let's call it nothing, and you realize it's capable of a ton, which is so impressive. Like, what are the big things you learned in those first few years?
Yeah, it was really just being okay with not being fast and being okay with, I don't have a pretty run. My form is not pretty. My cadence is not perfect. I probably don't look like everybody else, you know, but, you know, giving it a go, everything hurt. My muscles extremely hurt in the beginning because with Gittleman's, it's a muscular disorder. And so I was dealing with that as well. But, you know, it all got better in time. Just giving yourself grace is kind of the main thing. And eventually, you know, you work up to better things.
My mom was a gym teacher and a gymnastics coach, and she used to say that you could tell the kids who were kept indoors because when they get to practice or to gym class, they almost like to a person would have the same experience the first time they got hot and sweaty. They'd all think they were sick because they'd never felt flushed or hot or sweaty before unless they were sick. And the kids would come over and be like, Mrs. Crocker, I'm sick. I think I need to go home. And she's like, no. Like, your temperature is just rising. You're sweating. It's okay. Let's catch your breath and let's go. And from that moment on, like, it became very interesting to me to watch people find sports for the first time, knowing that you feel ill if you don't know what this is supposed to be like. So when you first lifted, when you first ran, when you first were allowed to sweat, what were those firsts like for you? Like, your first day waking up with soreness or DOMS or whatever it was, what were those firsts like?
So I would have like mini seizures sometimes after workouts, and I would go to bed and my husband would give me my medicine and give me more medicine and give me more medicine. And so it wasn't easy. It certainly hurt, but then, like, I don't know, my body just really liked the fitness, and something changed to where I stopped getting the seizures as much. And now I'm just healthier. You know, it's been almost 2 years since I've had one. So my first.
Why on earth would you keep doing it?
Huh?
I mean, like, if your repercussion for the workout was what you call, well, sure, like, I mean, that'd be a little scary, or like, okay, yeah. I paid for it. I learned my lesson. I shouldn't go back and do it again. Like, why'd you keep pushing through?
I just knew it was part of it. It was just part of how I had to get through it. I don't know.
This is a Joyce answer here. This is how it goes. We do coaching calls and I'll say, like, now this workout's going to be big, or this is going to be difficult. And she's like, yeah, you know, it was, but, you just get through it. That's like the Joyce answer. I did it. I got it done. And it's always kind of like casual and flippant, like not fully understanding my question. Like, why is there a different thing you do? It's just, you can see that. Maybe it was a coping mechanism. Maybe that's how you're wired, but that's always your answer. I got it done.
I think at the time, my kids were going through a lot medically, and this was kind of like the one thing I could control. You know, I could control getting up, going and doing a workout. I could control how much weight I put on the bar. I could control how many miles I could do. Whereas I couldn't really control the medical aspect of it. So I don't know, it kind of helped, and then it got easier as I went through it.
So I'm barking up the wrong tree by trying to pry here, huh? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, not at all.
I'm just going to get it done. There's no deeper.
Yeah, nothing deeper.
Just going to get it done. I prefer that answer.
Oh my goodness. I did this.
So is this hereditary then?
So it is. So I'm adopted, so I don't have any of my history from my family. But I have it. My spouse has the mutated gene. So we were told the kids wouldn't get it, but both of the kids have it. But I'm just really fortunate that they were diagnosed young. You know, that's like the key with Gittleman's, and they won't experience what I experienced. And that's all I can ask for as a parent. But yeah.
So you were going to say something.
Yeah,
and so I wedged a question in there.
So I did this workout about getting stuff done. I did this workout the other day, and it was the cardio Q3 or 4, and it was lightning outside, and that was the only time window I could get it done. And it was quality day, so I was like, I'm getting this workout done. So I had to do all the sprints in the rain, try not to get chased by the lightning, and then run in and do my ski and my row, and then run back out and do my run. But, you know, I just, the main thing is I, like, in my mind, I have to get it done regardless of the weather, the day, the time. You get the work done, because that's what everybody else is doing that's racing.
Did you know this, Bracken?
Nope.
Lightning risk?
Nope. Just like how she gets it done. Tell her moms at her workout group about this. Joyce shares what needs to be shared to allow her to keep working out.
Yes. I do like my calendar, though. I look at it probably every day. So I think Bracken knows that like, if my calendar's blank, I tend to freak out. I'm like, oh, I need something on this date. But other than that, I'm good.
So, like, kind of cutting corners here, Kirk. She's now 40. And Joyce, is it accurate to say you've PR'd all your distances in the last year?
Yes, I've PR'd everything from a 5K and completed 100K.
So with that as the end result.
Oh, and a mile. And I PR'd a mile too.
Yes. It's not now rocket science to see why. Because her mentality is, well, that's what all the races are doing. And spoiler alert, like, I don't want to ruin your mentality because you need to keep that. But spoiler alert, they're not. Kirk and I see many of the people you compete against or know many of them, and they're not.
Yeah.
Some people are, but you are on the far end of the spectrum, and it's the absolute reason why you're PRing everything under the sun. Does it help that you didn't start running till 33? Yeah, it did. But 7 years later to still be PRing doesn't happen unless you are wired the way or similarly to how you're wired.
Yeah. And before I trained with Bracken, I don't know if I told you this, I have plateaued for a full year to where every metric was almost identical for an entire year. And I was keeping data. So I knew a 15K 1 year and it was almost the same the next year. A marathon was almost the same, and everything, and even sprints like Spartan sprints were almost the same. And then to go from that to now PRing everything. So, it was definitely a good switch.
I mean, that's a,
well, let's just keep prying on Bracken's training. Yeah. What was the difference between, Bracken doesn't mind, I know.
Yeah.
What was the difference between the training, if you were to summate the training you were doing before you and Bracken got together, versus after? What led to the breakthroughs?
So it's not that it was bad. It was good, but I had kind of been doing the same thing for 5 years. And I had more energy than my training allowed. And Bracken used that energy towards strength and really developing me in the weight room, and doing other things instead of just writing off my extra energy. So I know in the beginning we talked about that, Bracken, where I was like, I've got more energy. And you're like, go do some deadlifts, go do some squats. And I did. And it really helped. And that's kind of, I think, where the change happened.
I didn't fully understand who Joyce was. Like, you can't early on, right? You can't possibly. It doesn't matter how many intro calls you do. You can't really get it. But over time, I got the full picture. And I realized that what we really did is we took her restrictor plate off. A lot of athletes is about holding them back from themselves. With Joyce, it was about trusting that she knows more than we know. And I'm sure that was the issue with, not that there's an issue, but with the prior coaching, it was that everything you were saying is generally proven false down the road with other athletes. Like, I can do more volume. I swear I can do more on top of 3 or 4 quality workouts. I can do more. And you're like, pump your brakes. You can't. You feel like you can, but you can't. And we get lulled into that sense of we know best for you. And with Joyce, it was realizing we don't. We don't know best. I don't know best. She just kept having more energy. And her concern was always, I was told I need to run this mileage for this race. If I'm not hitting this, should I be doing more? And early on, as like a defense mechanism for me to keep her safe, it was just like, well, why don't we just do more of this other thing? And then she'd do it and she'd still have energy. And we kind of stumbled upon this. Joyce can do a ton. Like, she should have been a CrossFitter, honestly. If I look back at things like the multiple wads per day kind of thing, she responds to that. She's like, the more she has activity, the more energy it generates. She's wired differently. So I don't think I did anything special. I think we took the restrictor plate off and said, if you can work, keep working. And then we tried a bunch of different styles of workouts, like CrossFit classes, plus OCR class right afterwards, threshold work before or after those things, meet up with your ultra friends on the weekend and run for 3 or 4 hours, like stuff I don't normally program. I started trusting that if I normally would shy away from it, it's probably good for Joyce.
Yeah, and I just really respond well. And I definitely, you know, I do take my rest days. A lot of people who know me, they feel like I don't rest. You know, I run every day, but I do have rest days. And rest is very important. But when I have my big days are big. And I respond better with that. We've really changed the tapering that I used to do. It's so much more enjoyable now because I'm getting ready for Anaheim, and this taper is like, I can do this and I'm not just sitting and laying on a couch. You know, I'm doing small little bursts of energy every day to get me through the taper so that I'm ready on race day.
Well, the first thing you said when I asked about change or what changed in your training, and your mind went right to strength training. Interestingly enough, I mean, that's the first thing you said anyways, and the restrictor plate being taken off is a rarity. I can speak to that. And I still think 90% of coaching is holding your athletes back, but you're not the common athlete apparently. So what is it about strength training? Like, you know, I'm a big believer. Bracken's a big believer. I believe as you're aging, the strength component is what keeps you moving well as you age, moving purposefully and fast. And, efficiently. So like, what's the difference you felt after being on like a purposeful strength program?
It just helped me with the runs. You know, I wasn't as fatigued after my runs. You know, I would start lifting and then I would have a big quality day the next day. And I'm like, oh, my legs don't hurt as much, or my hips don't hurt as much, or, you know, my back and calves don't hurt as much. And I never really put the two and two together, but it definitely helped.
Did your numbers go up notably? Like, have you been able to move more and more weight as well?
So I had never really lifted before that. So everything was a PR. Because I never had really squatted and deadlift and never really put numbers to it. And I didn't really even know how to calculate, you know, the bar is a certain weight and the plates are a certain weight, you know, and I had to add it all up. I'm still very new to all that. So I stick to the basics right now, kind of. But yeah, yes, to answer your question, yes, my numbers do go up, and pretty much every time I touch the weights, they go up. And now I can push about 400 pounds on the sled. And it's fun. You know, I enjoy lifting the weights, and I'm petite. So most people don't think I can push or lift. So it's fun to do it.
Well, delayed. Are you waiting?
My next question, I was waiting for Bracken. No, okay. I was just waiting for Bracken to jump in. Bracken gets this look on his face before he's going to talk. And he had that look on his face like before he talks. Yeah. No, what do you do, Bracken? I don't know if you know this, but before you talk, what you do is this. So I'll tell you, when we do a guest interview, if you're ready to say something, you're gonna spot check us both with your eyes. You're gonna go back and forth between guest me and see if we're gonna keep talking. And so before you get ready to say something, your eyes just go back and forth. You scan the room and then you speak. And so you were just scanning us both repetitively. So I was like, Bracken's going to take the floor. I'm just going to be quiet. Yeah. That's your tell. Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
Well, I definitely scanned the eyes, but I'm new to all this.
No, I have her schedule up next to me. Just looking back at things. Okay. And I was checking. So as she was talking, it reminded me of some things. Some of this was honestly like... It sounds like a coaching success story, right? Like I can't take this, because a lot of this was accidental. Early on, it was, we have to do things to bulletproof her for the ultra and be ready for HYROX. So let's try to do some of the ultra bulletproofing with our workouts. You know, it was, for a while, she had to do her lifting at home for certain things, and they had X number of equipment. So we did some stuff there. This wasn't like crazy foresight. As much as I'd like to take credit for this, this wasn't foresight. This was... Joyce just kind of like leans against the leash a little bit, and you're like, all right, I'm going to let her walk me instead of me walk her. That might not be a great like analogy, but that's how it feels. Like, I think I have the direction. We're going to go for a walk here. And then pretty soon it's like, I'm agreeing that we should be going that way instead. So looking back at how this training kind of progressed, it was, we took shots in the dark early on to try to do what you felt you needed with what I felt we should be doing. And then just evolved from there. Joyce is relatively intuitive as an athlete.
Yeah. And
I don't know if it's because of Gittleman's, where you have to feel things and know signs. And it, like you said, it has a muscular component to it. I don't know if that's it, that you're just more dialed into it, or because you didn't grow up just feeling all these things normally. You encountered them as like a fully functioning adult, and all your fatigue signals just hit you differently because you weren't a 6-year-old experiencing it. I don't know what it is, but your self-knowledge of what you can and can't handle far supersedes someone who has, what are we talking, 7 years of exercise experience. So I don't know if you have any more knowledge on why that is, but you have more than 7 years of intuition. And I don't know exactly why.
I mean, I didn't even do dance. I did computers. They stuck me in like computers and, you know, everything where you were inside is what I did. But yeah, no, everything we hit, and you would keep putting tests in, and some of the tests I'd be like, okay, I've never even done this before. Let's go test. And I think it was like a 1 mile. I had never even tested a 1 mile run. And I forget some of the others that you were like, okay, let's go test this. And I'm like, I've never ran that far or, you know, tested. So it was good. It's and then I think it's just the determination to get it done. I didn't exactly have, you know, I would have your training, but then, you know, I've got the kids and the husband and the job, and then trying to figure it out. So I would get very creative. So like at my CrossFit gym, I run their a dealership. So I jump a fence and then I run circles at a dealership and then I jump back over and I go back to the CrossFit gym to finish my workout. So you just have to be really creative to get the work done.
See, what I hear when I hear you guys talk is like, that's what outlines a really nice athlete coach relationship. That's what makes a good athlete. And that's what makes a good coach is a good coach needs to know when to tell you they are right and you are wrong. And a good coach needs to listen when they understand that you know yourself better than they do. And a good athlete says, no, I like my intuition and my gut is like, I know I could do more or I need more. And a good athlete allows their intuition to cohesively work with the coach. And then the coach responds appropriately. And it's the beautiful thing about working together for a long time. You know, you start off in the beginning and you're gathering data and learning about each other. What is Bracken's coaching like? And Bracken, you're saying, okay, what kind of athlete is Joyce? And a good relationship progresses and you take those things and it gets more and more dialed as you go, right? Of course, Bracken, you didn't hit a home run with your first training block because how could you? You didn't know her and she didn't know your training. And that's the nice thing. That's the best part about the athlete coaching relationship is once you get like a year in and you understand each other better and you've experimented and made the mistakes. And instead of getting the same training block 5 years in a row, it's just what it sounds like happened before you met Bracken to like, hey, let's work as a team. I think that still speaks to your brilliance, Bracken, and your intuition and brilliance as an athlete, Joyce, at least from what I'm hearing, because that's what makes the relationship work. Both things are needed.
Yeah. And I think it really helped that we took some things off the table. You know, I was so used to having to hit a certain mileage a week and I was used to having to hit certain paces and we just kind of threw it all out the window and just said, you know, let's go off of effort and just taking away the time and the mileage restraints kind of gave me some freedom to just go for best efforts, you know, and that's kind of how my training is now. Very much best effort. Just give it your best effort. And that's how we do it.
It's funny now, probably I would say for like a year, my answer every time Joyce is like, hey, I think this weekend I'm going to blank. I'm just always like, all right, good. I'll adjust next week. Like, I don't even ask questions from Joyce anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm going to go jump in this competition or I'm going to join the girls for a long run on the trails or whatever it is. It's just like, yeah. Fine. Because I no longer worry about load management. So yeah, we'll just adjust next weekend. I can't remember the last time I like pushed back against one of your ideas. And it might sound lazy to someone, no, but it's really just, don't. This is what works.
And it's so nice. It really is because I like the acceptance or the approval. I need the approval, you know, to go to get it done because I honestly I'm not as familiar with, okay, can my body handle the load? For instance, I did a high rocks and then the Thursday after a Saturday race, I went and ran a 50K for the first time. And it was just, you know, down the streets of Houston with some friends and I asked Bracken and I'm like, okay, is this okay? Can I do this? And he was like, yeah, go for it. And it was like the best time of my life. And it's just great to have somebody who can just check that, okay, you're fine, you'll survive this, and it's good.
And that answer would not have been yes for the vast majority of people I've ever interacted with. But I didn't even second guess it with her because at some point you just understand some people are more durable than others. Some people, like life energy is driven from workouts. Big effort, especially Joyce does well with social efforts. Even that first 100K Bandera, she jumped in. She'd never run that. Never been close to that. But just being out on course with people was energizing. So like 50K to Joyce with friends is like going for a 20-mile run solo for her.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
That sort of outlines, I mean, the flowing of the relationship. I agree. If most people came and said, I'm going to run a 50K 5 days after an all-out high rocks, you'd be like, well, just know it's going to be a tough day. And I'm not saying it's a great, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I'm also saying it's a bad idea if you want to feel good about yourself when you're done. That would be the normal conversation. But again, you learn. So I like that. I wanted to not pivot, but follow up. You mentioned, okay, so you probably thought you were busy before you started training. Mm-hmm. You know, 33, mom of two at that point. I think you had both your kids.
Yes.
By then. You said they were how old? 13 and...
So they're 13 and almost 11 now. So I think they're probably...
Okay.
Even something. I've been seven.
Okay. So, right. So point being, you had, when you started this, I'm sure mom life, you're working, you said, running the household, you mentioned you have your husband, everything, you have all the life things and everybody thinks you're so busy, right? Everybody thinks they're so busy. They can't do any more than they're possibly doing. And they're all wrong. Every one of you that thinks you're so busy, you could always be busier. I promise you. I'm just wondering, like, implementing that into your life and then hearing you're a workhorse and you have a big engine and you can do multiple things a day sometimes. I know kids' schedules are hectic. You're like a professional chauffeur at times with getting kids carted around and eating into your own schedule. So, like, could you, like, talk me through that, like, the balancing act, especially being it sounds like more of a higher output athlete. I'm like, how do you coordinate all that?
Sure. I think it works well. Like, my husband and I, we work very much as a team, to get all the things done. I'm the driver and he's the chef, and we have those roles. So he's always cooking dinner and I'm taking kids everywhere. But I think, like, on days that I work, I get the work done either before work or after work. And then on days I don't work, I get it done while everybody's gone. And that's kind of how I balance it. And then I still take care of the house and all of that. I will say I don't really watch TV. I don't watch movies. I don't sit down often. That's kind of like the things that, and I don't see friends as much as I would like. And then when I'm training for High Rocks more, I don't see my trail friends as much. But that's kind of how I balance it.
Why don't you watch TV?
Because I would rather train. I would rather train or help.
You don't. With you choose to fill it.
I choose to fill it with something else. Yeah. Now, okay. During it, when
yeah, that I'm, is me. That's exactly it.
I watch so much TV.
No, I do watch footage from races.
Yeah.
I watch High Rocks races and I'll watch racing, but I really just don't watch TV unless I'm tapering. We'll watch some movies. You know, if I'm tapering for a race. We'll watch the movies and stuff, but that's about it.
Do you ever feel like I feel like this? So it's common to, like, people think they're funny when they quote movies or they, oh, you've never seen that movie or have you watched this show? And I'm always like, nope, I've never seen that movie. Have you ever watched this show? Nope, never watched that show. And you almost feel a little judged. You're like, what do you do with yourself then? Like, you didn't see this movie. How could you not have seen this show or this movie? You're a loser. Like, that's how I feel when people ask me if I've seen things and I'm like, I haven't. And then they get judgy. Do you ever feel like that? You ever get judged for your lack of media consumption?
Absolutely.
I do.
All the time. Yeah. And I am not up to date on any current events, celebrities, or anything. So, yes. But I don't let it bother me. I'd rather train. I would rather run, get it done, and hang out with the kids and hang out with the family.
You're not a movie judger, are you, Bracken? A show judger?
No. No, I'm not a believer that the things you enjoy, you should make other people feel bad for not enjoying. I have a lot of screen time in my life, Kirk.
I do like listening to other people who watch TV, though, and they, you know, summarize the TV shows or the TV movies, and so it's good. That's how I kind of juggle it all.
I'm still not happy yet. Walk me through a day.
Sure.
Walk me through a busy day. When you wake up, what the day looks like.
Yeah.
Hour by hour, when you go to bed. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I'll give you a Tuesday. Tuesdays are my big days. So I work on Mondays and Wednesdays, but Tuesday I do a 5 a.m. High Rocks class. So I'll wake up at around 4, go to my High Rocks class, which I love. but it's so early. And so I finished that.
What does that mean, your High Rocks class?
So it's a group of, it's like a gym who has a fitness group, and we all do High Rocks. So it's a really good way for me to touch High Rocks modalities, stations, and just kind of use it almost like a warm up. But sometimes we go fast, sometimes it's slower. It just kind of gets me comfortable with everything. But I do that in the mornings, and then I come home. I make breakfast for the kids, usually crescent roll, kolaches, and then I shower. I get them ready. I drop off my daughter, drop off my son. Then I usually come home, eat a big breakfast, and then I'll go do my workout for Bracken. Repeats. So it's usually like 5 minutes on, 1 minute off, or 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. And I'll either do it on the treadmill if it's incline day. And my treadmill is outside in my garage, which is hot. Or I will do it around a pond, and I'll watch the turtles and the ducks. And I get that done. And then I usually have a finisher. And so I'll go to the gym if I need to for the finisher, or I'll do it with my equipment at home. Then I eat lunch. I get ready, pick up both kids. Then my daughter has dance at 4:45. So my one child gets off at 3:30. The other one gets off at 4:30. But I have a friend who picks him up on Tuesdays. My daughter has dance at 4:45, drop her off, come home, help my husband out with dinner, life stuff, and then I get any groceries if we need groceries for the evening, or, you know, I might do a couple of weights with my husband outside, and then I pick up my daughter, we eat dinner. And then everybody kind of goes to bed at about 9:30 is when they go to bed. And then we go to bed right after. That's kind of our Tuesday. So on Tuesdays, I usually get about 2 hours of work done. And then I typically get 7 miles in, 7 to 8, depending on the week, 6 to 8 out of all the workouts. And then on a Monday and Wednesday is when I work. So then I'll run. It's usually three to 5 miles on Wednesdays. And so I'll do that in the morning if I have time, get the kids ready, drop them off, go to work, come home, and get stuff ready for dinner, and then drop off my daughter to dance, and then drop off my son to band. And then so kind of how it goes. Or if I didn't get my run done in the morning, I get it done in the heat while they're both at their places, and then we eat dinner together in the evening. So pretty typical, pretty basic. It's
interesting.
Basic base.
Pretty well, like, not really though. I mean, like, on Tuesday to go to a class, which would be people's centerpiece of their entire day, mm-hmm. to do that, then come home, take care of the family, of course, then go do another standalone workout, which people would consider their centerpiece for the day. You've already done two of those now, and it's, what, 10 a.m., 11 a.m. And then you may have a finisher, which means you have to, like, drive to the gym and go do some more things. And then once in a while, you go lift weights for extra work with your husband. Like, on some days, that could be considered four separate bouts of movement if you're outlining that, which won't even be in the realm of possibility for a lot of people. So I don't know, boring, typical, sure, whatever words you want to use, but that's not... And my question for Bracken then, and I'm prying hard on your coaching right now, Bracken.
Yeah, you are.
And I love it.
And I love my Tuesdays. I do. I love my Tuesdays. I cannot find anybody, though, to do the you know, 5x1s or stuff. I ask friends all the time, and, like, nobody does it with me. But go ahead, Kurt.
You got to be more convincing. I have a handful of athletes I coach that also really enjoy going to their Spartan class or their OCR class. You know, it's both social and a workout, and finding a way to get it all done. So you're happy. You get the things you like. We get the things that we think would work for you, and then it all comes together. But it can be a tricky thing sometimes. Like the decision, Bracken or Joyce, to do like, okay, I know you're going to go to a class that's going to what we would say pre-fatigue you before like the meal, really, right? Of the 5 minute on, 1 minute off. Like, how did you come to that decision that it still makes sense? Like, if we're going to work hard, we're going to cram it all into one day, so to speak. Like, I'm just curious because you always try to balance that, right, Bracken, between if somebody has a routine that you're now implementing your training into, that's always, you know, a tricky thing. I just want to hear your thought process.
Typically, I say, I'm not going to tell you to drop anything. I'm going to add my work in on top of it. And then when you get to the point where you're ready to drop it, then we'll do that. And that's how I started with Joyce, mm-hmm. assuming it was going to be too much work, and it wasn't. And so we never dropped it. But mm-hmm. for the first ultra block, we decided she's doing that morning class. So 1 week we are going to do the work that we want to get done after the class. We're going to pre-fatigue for the class. And then the next week, we're going to do our purposeful work prior to the class and then finish with that. So we just alternated throughout that 13-week block going before and after and alternating. Are we doing like finisher grindy work or if it was spicier stuff? I believe we did that before the class. And if it was grindier work, we did it after the class. Figuring work is work for an ultra. Let's get used to moving on tired legs. But if it's purposeful, we wanted to do it prior. But she just kept responding to it. Generally, the process is like 2 to 8 weeks with someone I work with before they're ready to drop their prior fitness routine and move to the next thing. And I know that that's the process, so I don't push early. I let them make the decision when it's ready to be done. And instead, Joyce was asking for more work by Wednesday and Thursday. So now there is, and it used to be like, if you end up cranking in class, she said sometimes they go harder, sometimes they don't. It's like, if you end up cranking, let's back off on the intervals. Let's get the intervals done, but we're moving down a deviation of effort. And if you don't crank in class, then let's use up that energy on the intervals. And now he doesn't really get those instructions anymore. The class is the class. The workout's the workout. Joyce is going to get it done. I don't worry.
Yeah. And I knew like if I couldn't hit the pacing that I wanted, you know, I would take away the loop class because essentially I need to hit certain pacing, for that workout. And so I just was like, okay, if for any day that, you know, it's too much or it's just the weather doesn't work, then I can drop the class, sleep in if I ever needed the sleep those days. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like with the morning classes and then a quality run session, do you usually still feel ready for your quality run session and you have a good workout, or do you feel like it does take away sometimes?
I really enjoy it because being fatigued for that and then racing and you're not fatigued, it's so much better. Because I go into those a little fatigued, and so I know I'm going to have to work a little bit harder during training, whereas in race day, you know, there's no fatigue. You're just fresh and it just feels so much better.
Yeah. That makes sense. So when did you pivot then to the ultra, the bug to go further and farther? I'm kind of curious about that pivot, and then I'm also curious like what else you're chasing coming up. But what made you want to keep going further and do more, and how did you get introduced to that?
Yeah, so I did the mom groups for a while, and then I saw something on TV about Spartan, and I was like, oh, that looks cool. And I found a gym, you know, that had the Spartan stuff. So I did that for many years. And, you know, I went to Killington, and I went to West Virginia, and I went to maybe one in Tahoe. I can't remember, but I did all the Spartans, and those were fun. And then I did the ultras. And then I found a really nice group of women and men that do trail racing close to me. And that's kind of when I fell in love with the ultra scene. I said, okay, if they can do it, if I can go with like-minded people, then I can run any distance with the right group of people. So that's why I do the trail running. And it's just so fun to, you know, go in the woods and, you know, run in the dark sometimes, and it's nice. And then I started Hyrox kind of in 21. And so I had always done Hyrox and ultras like together. Kind of, I treat them more like seasonally though So I have like a block where I do ultras when my daughter's not doing quite so much dance. And then I do high rocks more when she's in dance. So I've kind of tried to do it that way.
I'm curious about the group running in relation to all that. I have a handful of athletes who sometimes miss, we'll call it. Something doesn't get done. And they're always lone wolf athletes that tend to fall into that more than social athletes, if that makes sense. The ones who, I don't know, don't hold themselves accountable, or they lack a little bit of discipline or find an excuse not to. Probably have a half a dozen of them who trend that direction. Do you feel like the group running, like if it weren't for the group stuff, because you brought it up a number of times, is that pivotal for you? Like, would this be significantly less enjoyable or less consistent for you if you didn't have all of that? Like, what do you feel like it brings to you, for you?
I feel like with ultras, I need the community. High rocks, I can do by myself in a garage, in a basement. I could do high rocks alone forever. But for ultra training and trails, I have to have people. You have to have somebody, you know, telling you to drink more water. Or, you know, it's just nice. High rocks, you know, I could do by myself. So for sure, the community is important for ultras.
What if you didn't have that community? How would that change things for you? Do you think you would do it?
I probably would. The mileage would be a little, I would get a little nervous just because of Gittleman's. You know, if I do collapse on course, I would need somebody to know to hand me the medicine, because that's what I need essentially. So it is nice to have somebody there who kind of knows my situation. But I've never, so far, so good. Yeah. So I'd probably still do it. And I do carry medicine on me while I race. So usually I'm pretty good.
I just think it's a missing component for a lot of people. It can be such a mental task and grind to show up every day and do it yourself, right? And on the days you don't want it takes so much extra out of your bucket to do it. Whereas if you're meeting other people, maybe you don't have to take as much out of your bucket to show up, put your shoes on and go. And so it's like, I think for the people who miss, it's like death by a thousand cuts. They force themselves to do it yesterday, and then they force themselves to do it today. And pretty soon, like, they just don't want to force themselves anymore, right? And they don't have anything to look forward to because they're catching up with their girlfriends or their training partners. So there's zero that they want to do about it. You know, they look forward to that day and then they skip or they push it off. So I think for like a big sector, I think they could benefit. Like, to your credit, you found a community and you plugged yourself into it. And I can think of a handful of people who benefit from that. And so then I'll ask my last follow-up question with that. With that all said, is how do you find a community like that? A lot of people are out there. Like, it sounds like you have a number of people. Like, how did somebody that went from no community to having a running community do that?
I was just very open to really anyone who wanted to run with me. And then I just always was like, well, I just hope I can keep up, you know, kind of was my mentality. Let me just make sure I can keep up. I found the Wolfpack group, because I was running trails one day and they passed me and they were like, hey, come run with us sometime. And that's kind of how I found them. And then the others are just local, you know, just looked up local run clubs and just threw myself into it. And that's how that went. You have to just let it go and throw yourself in and hope for the best and find some like-minded people.
The ones that I know that don't want to do it think they're going to hold everybody back. They think they're going to be too slow to do it. They think they don't want to be a burden to the others in the group. So then they're so scared of that, that they forces them to not to show up. What would you say to those people?
I mean, you're going to be slow in the beginning and you just have to learn to keep up and, you know, maybe tell yourself if you can't keep up, you'll get lost on the trail and, you know, somebody will get you. I don't know.
That's your advice. Somebody will get you if you don't. That's not going to help.
Not. You'll be fine. They'll be nice.
If you can't keep up, it's okay.
No, that's not it. That's a Joyce answer.
That was not a helpful answer.
Just show up. No, the trails we go on, they're a little sketchy. And there was a situation recently. I won't get into it, but it was funny. So no, we joke about that sometimes. So we're always together on the trails. I never run by myself. But now everybody's so nice, really. Running communities, they're there because they want a community and it takes everybody. And, you know, pace is just a number. And you can't let it dictate your life. Because what's fast for you is slow to somebody else. So everybody's going to have a fast and slow. You just have to show up and try to find somebody.
Makes sense.
Hopefully that.
And you have to think, like, if you're intimidated about it, like, how many runners do you know that are like a-holes, or that like you really don't enjoy their company? Like, usually, especially in adult life, it's not judgmental teenage years or college where your times are your social status. This is adult life where just people getting together with like interests. And it's not like you're going to show up and people are going to be judgmental or not welcoming, right? I'm sure you were taken in with open arms when you found them. So yeah. We haven't actually talked to a community runner much in recent times. We haven't talked about this topic with any athlete recently, I don't think, Bracken. So I just think it's an interesting angle, because it seems like it's a very part of your routine that keeps you showing up and keeps you effective, which I think is important for some people to hear.
Yeah, and I don't really run with them as much during the High Rocks season, because that work, I choose to do that mainly by myself, just to hit the numbers I want to hit and do everything. It was just too hard to try to find a group. So now I do all that kind of by myself. But yeah, no, it's good. It's good to have the variety. And I think probably helped I never was on a sports team. So, you know, I never could relate with getting picked for a team or anything, because I was never on a team.
I'm the exact opposite. I would happily train for an ultra by myself, but I really struggle to do hybrid or High Rocks work without a training partner. Like, am I going to go set up the sled again? I could just be out on the trail in a few minutes. I'm the dead opposite of you, Joyce.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that is the opposite. Because I love just me and a sled on a hot, you know, humid day, and just push that sled around and get it done. So
what else do we have to dive in with, Joyce, that I don't know, Bracken? I know we were looking to somewhat wrap up around 2 today, so I know we're getting close to that, but
yeah.
What do you got? Anything? What else do we need to dive into with Joyce?
I'm going to Anaheim in a couple of days.
Woo!
I'm excited about that. Last High Rocks for the season, probably. So, but yeah, we're doing that. What were you going to say, Bracken?
Yeah. Last year she went over to, was it Manchester?
Manchester.
For the High Rocks World Championships.
Oh.
Yeah, that was fun. And then.
And that's kind
Anaheim's
of the
on a
the
Sunday, isn't it? This weekend?
Yeah.
It's not on the Saturday, I believe. Isn't it a day later? My athlete, because I have a number racing there this weekend as well, and I'm always like, they must have all made rent and put a typo on here, because the Sunday races, which you don't see very often. So
that's
like,
why I couldn't do that.
So even on one, I'm like, no, it's a Saturday race. I programmed on a Saturday for the race, and they're like, the race is on a Sunday, dude. And I'm like, that can't be right. But yeah. It is.
Yeah. And we don't have to spend time on it. We just talked about not judging people on times and everything. But I think the piece I don't want to get lost here is that even though it's not the important takeaway of this interview, Joyce actually has become fast. Like that first High Rocks, she got down under 120. Like that's kind of the holy grail for most age group athletes is crack 120. Like she came out and ran 118. She's her 10K is getting faster. She just ran the Bandera 100, and she was one of the only people moving in the last few hours, running through the night. That it's not just that she's found a way to control a piece of her life when she needed control, or that she's found a way to like release the sweat that she hadn't for years and become healthier. Yeah, all those were great byproducts. Like her body has become much more under control. The seizing is much under control, but she's actually become quite good at it. And that is an interesting piece that obviously we're not focusing on it, but that you can find sport late in life and your competitive years aren't gone. You can still do that. And I shouldn't say late in life, but late compared to not that you're at on your back nine here, Joyce, but compared to a middle school or high school athlete.
Yeah, no, I definitely get top. I've gotten third a lot, and I've joked to Bracken a lot about my age group. I always usually get third. And I've ended up getting pretty good. I think if you just stick with something long enough, eventually it clicks, and eventually you're going to, disciplined or keep the ball rolling long enough to be pretty good.
She's humbled too, huh?
Yeah. Just get it done. Do it long enough. You'll make podiums.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Now, I really
do have that. Well, I guess just speaking of how good you've gotten, what are your big, I guess, before we wrap this up, then what are you shooting for coming up? Like, are you comfortable sharing? Like, I want to run this 5K or this in High Rocks. Like, what are we shooting for next?
I really wanted to go to Worlds this year. And I don't know. Anaheim, I think, is going to be my last, but I'm not sure how many qualifying slots there are. So that was kind of like the big thing. But whatever happens in Anaheim, it'll be better than, you know, it's been. So that's kind of the big one. After that, I don't know. I might do DecaFit. I don't really know what I'm going to do next. I kind of focus all on one race and then, you know, eventually look down the road. So definitely an ultra in the fall.
This is how it's going to go. Yeah. Within a few weeks, Joyce is going to say, hey, I got talked into running this ultra. And then she's going to prepare for that. And along the way, she's going to PR her 5K and her 10K again, because that's what she does in leading up to it. And then she gets done with ultra. And she's like, I've really enjoyed my trail time, but it's time for High Rocks. And in the middle of it, she's going to say, all my trail friends are saying, when is High Rocks done? So you can do your next ultra. And she's just going to continue that cycle.
Yes, exactly.
Until it runs out of steam.
Yeah. Exactly. That's how it goes. So not really any big goals. Just, you know, I'm just happy with having a good time on the trails and in High Rocks. I just, you know, I'm very fortunate that I haven't had any injuries, or any time delays or anything that set me back. So I'm just having fun, you know, having fun with the trails and having fun with High Rocks and just seeing where it takes me. And I also, every time I travel for High Rocks or any Joyce, of the races, I see stuff too, which is fun. Go ahead.
Joyce, I want to see how well you know yourself. When you give me your recap after a race, what's the first thing you always say? What is your first statement after every race? Kirk, what would your guess be?
I had fun.
I had so much fun. It was fun. So much fun. Every single time.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the only athlete I've ever worked with who every single time the answer was, oh my goodness, it was so much fun. I had so much fun. No matter what the race, you don't have fun in High Rocks. You don't necessarily have fun at a 100K. But Joyce does. And I, again, is that part of not being able to do things for decades? Probably. But whatever it is, she has found a way to truly be one of those people that enjoys the process and the destination.
Yeah, no. Every race, you know, I finish it and I'm in one piece. That's step one. You know, I survived healthy. And step two was, did I have fun? And then step three is, you know, my placing and how timing and all. So, but yeah, the Bandera was so much fun. I remember just going on and on about how fun it was, especially the end and the dark. It was a lot of fun.
I have one last question for you.
Okay.
And I want you to be honest with me.
Okay.
And then we're going to wrap this thing.
Okay, sounds good.
What time are you going to run in Anaheim?
I don't know. Hopefully, okay, so So last year I did 118 as a solo individual. My mixed time in March, which was a couple months ago, was 105. So in between that, which is a big gap.
So a PR. You planned a PR on Sunday.
A PR.
All right,
PR,
she will PR.
Sure. Yes. So ideally,
what if you punch? I know I'm coaching.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know I'm coaching somebody who needs to take top two, for example, to get his age group slot to Worlds. And that's our goal, top two, right? Let's say you punch your ticket. Would you go?
I would, yes. And I probably. So I think I have to hit 110 or 111, but I don't know if I can hit that time. And I don't want to assume that I can hit that time. So I'm going to be happy with anything faster than 118.
That's good answer.
Is my answer. Yes. So yeah.
Bracken, what time is she going to run? Let's see. What time do you think Joyce is going to run on Sunday?
If I know Joyce, she's saying, I think I'll run 116. I probably can run 112 if I have a really good day, but deep down, I really want to run 110. Those would be the numbers I'd have in mind if I were her.
Yeah.
How accurate is that, Joyce?
100%. 100% accurate.
But what time is she going to run, Bracken?
Oh,
I don't know.
This is not a good game to play, Kirk.
No. It's not.
I know.
Okay, Joyce has a 110 to 112 in her. She does. If I were setting the Vegas odds, I would put it right at 114 and say plus or minus 2 minutes from there is what I think the probable range is, 112 to 116. But she can pop a 110 and it won't shock me. I won't be disappointed if she doesn't run 110, but she has a 110 in her.
I've definitely tapered very well this whole week. I'm like following the script, following everything to the T. So I'm feeling good. And I did the 30-30-10.
You're right.
Today.
That wasn't.
But go ahead.
No, this is your podcast. You go ahead. Oh.
So this is our standard Hyrox taper workout that we do. A lot of people do this, but that 30-30 times 10 by 3 generally.
It felt really good. Mm. So, and it was so humid and hot and gross in the gym today. So it felt good. All the times were good. So, but whatever happens.
Great. Well, it was an unfair question to ask.
Yeah. No, it's okay. And I had a feeling you were going to ask it. So it's okay.
I've been like in this later stage, like now that I'll be 41 tomorrow. Actually, the day this episode releases, my birthday today, guys.
Oh, nice. Hey. Happy birthday. I didn't know.
As I'm 40, well, you're a day early, but when this releases tomorrow, it will be. Okay. And as I've gotten older, I'm so much more comfortable calling my shots and just being like, screw it. There's no shame if I don't accomplish it, but it's like a helpful internal process for me to be like, you know what? I plan to go break this course record. And it's a weird accountability thing I play with myself. And if I don't, I don't care if I fail. And I don't care if I tell everybody I'm going to do it and I don't. For me, I don't know why. It almost puts it into my psyche and then it gets into my body and then my body knows what to do with it. It's a really weird thing, but I never understood the people when I was younger that would be like, I'm going to break the record or I'm going to win this race. And then they go and they do it. I'm like, what a cocky SOB. And now later, and as I get like more tenured, I see the power in it. So anyways, that's my own weird disposition now. That's why I was prying, trying to curate it for you.
Sure. And I haven't really ever even told anybody. So no, this is good. I'm glad we talked about it.
I understand. Cool. Joyce is 40. I understand we can't PR forever. I know that this train will start slowing down at some point, but she has PR'd. I think one race you ran almost the exact same time you ran last year.
Yeah, because it was a week after Bandera.
You've PR'd. That's true. It was a week after her first 100K. She ran the exact same. Was it a 10K?
15K.
15K?
Yeah.
Yeah. So outside of that one, which to me, and Kirk, I think you'll agree, running, matching your last year's result 1 week after your first ever 62-mile race is a PR.
No, I was very pleased.
Yeah. So anyways, outside of that, she has PR'd every time she stepped onto the course for like 2 years straight. So even though I know that can't continue indefinitely, it has to happen before I'm going to believe it's going to stop. So she's going to PR this weekend.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, I'll be peeping the results. And for anybody who, are you a social media human? Is there anywhere people can follow along or peek at what you're doing?
Yes. And my daughter was very excited that I could share this. So it's joyce.runs. Very simple. What? Very simple. So
your daughter wants to pump your stats. I see.
Yeah. Yeah. My daughter's like, oh, you're going to be famous. So.
Yep. She's not wrong.
But yeah, I do need to probably post a little bit more. So, but yeah, it's been a great talk and I love the podcast. We listen to it all the time and I absorb all the knowledge and it really helps my drives and helps my days.
Well, that makes us feel warm and fuzzy. So thank you. And I assume that's how you found Bracken. So it brought people together. It beautiful is. Thing.
Yeah.
Well, good luck this weekend. Thank you for your time. I got nothing else to add. Bracken, you want to send us off?
Joyce.
Yeah.
Go head out, travel well, go PR. And then we'll update everyone on Training Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
See you, Joyce.
Thanks.
If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.